You are watching and listening to Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are. Let's do this thing. Triple Threat Wednesday today. Mark Lawrence will join us. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. We'll talk college football and a little NFL. We're going for the two. Joe Lisi. We're doing what the Oregon Ducks do all the time, unsuccessfully, except we're successful at it. Joseph Lisi will join us. Go for the two.com's Joe Lisi. You can hear him and Rich Sermonello on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network every Saturday morning. The National Hockey League regular season is now just 1 week away. It's time for your fantasy drafts. I know I have a couple of drafts this week, so we're bringing in Roto expert George Kurtz to help us break it down, get some league strategy from George, maybe a couple of sleepers, who does he like, and all that other fun puck talk. So we've got your back covered today, man. We're hitting a lot of different bases. We're hitting the rink, we're hitting the gridiron, we're hitting the diamond, we're hitting it all on the program today. As the Major League Baseball playoffs began with a dramatic Toronto Blue Jays victory, another game-winning home run. Now, I guess we could call Edwin Encarnacion's three-run shot a walk-off shot, but like a lot of things in society, I hate it. I hate the term walk-off. Now, the fact of the matter is, if you're unaware, the term walk-off never existed before. It's like a lot of things. Like they didn't exist before. Like all these stats that we have now. Term walk-off. Walk-off was invented in 1988. And there's sort of an urban legend, and including myself, I always thought it. And one of the greatest baseball playoff moments ever was, of course, Kirk Gibson. I don't believe what I just saw. Kirk Gibson's home run, which he one-legged it around the bases against Dennis Eckersley. And the urban legend was that Eckersley threw the pitch. Eckersley was asked about it. He said, I threw the pitch. He hit it. I walked off. But it's not actually true. It was earlier in the year, actually, that Eckersley had used the term walk-off and when discussing stats, as Eckersley's like an intellectual guy. But, okay, it's fine if Dennis Eckersley, one pitcher, says it, but somehow it's worked its way into the baseball lexicon. The term walk-off, it's stupid. It's stupid. It's not a walk-off home run. He didn't walk. He jogged. How about a jog-off? When Sidney Crosby scored the game-winning goal in the Olympics, was that a skate-off goal? Is it a walk-off touchdown? What's this walk-off crap? Where are they walking to? You know, it's not a walk-off, it's game-winning. Now, speaking of crap, it's nice to see the Toronto Blue Jay fans are keeping it classy once again. Now, you know, some people will say, well, it's just an isolated incident. As somebody threw a beer can at Adam Jones last night. Now, I don't know what's worse, the fact that you're stupid enough to throw a beer can at somebody during a baseball game. Number two, whether you're stupid enough to actually pay $15 for a Bud Light. And number three, who the hell drinks light beer willingly? I've been to Blue Jay games. You don't have to drink light beer. Light beer is like diet soda. It sucks. What, did you have a salad at the game too? I'll have a light beer and a salad, please. You know, like seriously, word on the street is it might be a chick. And I hope it is a chick that actually threw it because she's probably pretty cool then. If it's a dude, you're a pansy. If it's a chick, you're cool. You know what? Salads and light beer, la-di-da. What are you going to do? They have a tofu stand at ballparks now? In my day, we went to the baseball stadium. They had hot dogs and popcorn and ice cream, and that was it, and you liked it. Nowadays, I'll have some sushi. Screw you and your sushi, all right? Now, normally I'm not for police abuse, but this fan deserves to be beat up real good, like old-fashioned police beating. You know, phone book over the head, maybe a couple of shots to the midsection, maybe like break his fingers. You don't even arrest them. You beat them up outside the stadium. It's unacceptable to throw things at any professional athlete. Now, it's true, it's true. You might ask yourself, Morenci, didn't you once hit Billy Gunn in the face with a full beer cup once? Yes, I did. But I said professional athlete, this was a wrestler, and it's a little bit different. Everybody was throwing things into the ring. I just happened to hit him in the face. It's a little bit different story that we don't have enough time to. It's an epic, legendary story. As Billy Gunn got so upset, he pulled me over the rail. Like I was in the first row. He pulled me over the rail, put me in like an arm bar, and people in the arena thought I was part of the show. I had people coming up to me and asking me for my autograph after. Hey, you're a new character. Who are you? I told him I'm a manager. No Do I look like a wrestler? Yeah, I got beat up by Billy Gunn, but I'm not a wrestler. But like I said, that's another story. I partied pretty hard that night, actually, and I will admit I was drunk. Drunker than a Toronto Blue Jay player. What's up with the Blue Jays anyways? Every time you guys win a damn game, you party like Prince in 1999. The Toronto Blue Jay players drink more than Motley Crue did on the Shot of the Devil tour, all right? Like, enough is enough. Did you win anything? You know, oh, hey, look, we clinched a play-in wild card. Hey, let's get wasted. Hey, where are the goggles? Hey, we won the wild card play-in game. Now you're in the playoff. You guys underachieve all year. Your owners have $24 billion. You barely get into the playoffs and you're partying? You're partying? Last night you're partying again. Again. You got a game on Thursday afternoon. You know, you guys didn't learn your lesson last year when you clinched your division title and you decided to get wasted for 3 days and then you let Kansas City get home field advantage. What happened in the playoffs after that? What happened? Oh, yeah, you lost at Kansas City. You know, unless your name's Josh Hamilton, I don't think the Texas Ranger players are waking up hungover today, all right? You know, get it together. Like, seriously. Like, every time the Jays win, it's a celebration time. Hey, bust out cool in the gang. Well, I'll tell you what. The Major League Baseball postseason starts off with a bang, as everybody hates the Toronto Blue Jays, if you notice. The Texas Rangers hate the Jays. The Orioles hate the Jays. The Royals hate the Jays. Except the Rangers really hate the Jays. And, of course, earlier this year, Roughneck Odor punched Bautista in the face. Now, Julian Assange was supposed to bring down Hillary Clinton's campaign. He's been touting and promising an October surprise. He was supposed to come out onto the balcony and deliver something that was going to crush Hillary Clinton's political career. He brought nothing besides pimping his books. Now, Julian Assange's October surprise might have been a major disappointment, but don't worry. It looks like Major League Baseball has a couple of October surprises up their own, up their sleeves. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I want to apologize, which I don't do often, but I want to apologize. I said they threw the beer can at Jones. It was actually Kim. Jones was right there, and Jones was mouthing off with the fans and stuff. But nevertheless, I still think you're an idiot if you're willingly paying $15 for a light beer. I understand, like, paying $15 for a vodka or something at a game, but a light beer? Like, come on. You hang out at the yogurt and tofu stand as well? Well, like, do they have tofu stands in baseball parks yet? They probably do in, like, Seattle. You know, Seattle and San Francisco, like yogurt and stuff like that. All right, let's bring in, so we got a great show here. We got Joe Lisi, who's actually good friends with a man who joins us right off the top. And we got George Kurtz, roto expert, sandwich in between to talk some hockey, guys. NHL hockey starts in a week. And in fact, we're now joined by a Florida Panthers season ticket holder, Playbook.com's Mr. Mark Lawrence. How you doing, Mark?
No longer one of just a few Florida Panthers season ticket holders, I might add.
I used to kid that you're one of six, but the bandwagon's filling up, so I guess after last year, you renewed once again, huh?
I renewed once again this year, and I'm looking forward to a half-filled crowd this year, so I think big things are in store for the Panthers. A lot of enthusiasm down here, but all in all, they do have a really nice young team.
No, they really do. Panthers are going in the right direction. All right, Mark, so I want to touch a lot of topics. We're going to dip our beak in everything today. You know, we're like the mob. Racketeering, extortion, loan sharking. They dip their beaks in everything. So we're going to dip our beak. Let's start off with some baseball before we get to the Giants-Mets tonight. Dramatic game last night. Everyone's buzzing about the home run and the fact that somebody threw a beer can in the middle of the game at the Orioles outfield last night. But people in Baltimore, you know, Buck Showalter has a lot of street cred, but, you know, they want justice. They want to fire him. Like, they just, you know, this is, you know, I heard a good comparison, and it was almost like Pete Carroll throwing the football in the Super Bowl instead of giving it to Lynch when they're on the 1 yard line against the Patriots. Because really, like, I got to tell you, Mark, like, it's baffling to me. And I was doing a live show last night, and I swear, I thought Britton already pitched. I was like, I must have missed him. He must have been in there in the ninth or the tenth. And then, no, they bring in Geraldo Jiménez. It makes no sense.
no sense whatsoever. In fact, he should have been in there in the ninth inning. Earlier, in fact, he should have been in the baseball game. It didn't really matter that way, but it mattered most when Encarnacion went deep on them, and Jack Britton watched from the bullpen. Absolutely unbelievable that he wouldn't use the best player, arguably, in the American League this year in a one-and-out series.
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone, we had Dave Malinsky on the show yesterday. We had Roto experts. Everyone was saying, if this game gets to the bullpen, it's advantage Baltimore. And then Buck doesn't use it. It really is almost, it's like Mariano Rivera, like staying in the pen, isn't it?
No, it's not like he brought in an ace pitcher either. Ubaldo Jimenez, I mean, where is he in the rankings of baseball starters? I mean, he's average at best, lousy, probably more likely. And he brings him in instead of Zach Britton, a total head scratcher.
All right, so we got some real aces on the hill tonight, man. Money's coming in on the Giants. This game was a pick 'em for the last couple of days. Now I'm seeing Giants as high as minus 120. We got Bumgarner and Syndergaard. Bumgarner 7-3 with a 2.14 earned run average and 12 career postseason starts. He's 4-0 with an 0.62 earned run average at Citi Field in four starts. He's a postseason legend. Syndergaard's not bad either. Real intriguing pitching matchup tonight.
I think it's a real good pitching matchup here tonight. In fact, so good is Bumgarner that you're seeing him a small favorite in the baseball game right now. That just shows the credibility he has, and he's been, as you know, masterful in the postseason here. I like the Giants' chances in this baseball game tonight. I think they're the better team. It's their time of the year. They got their ace on the staff. I think the Giants win in advance.
They're a dangerous team right now, and they're a real dangerous team, and they're actually in the 18-1 range to win the World Series. And I told people, I warned them, and I'm a Dodger fan. I said, these guys aren't dead, man. They're always back for more. And here they are right now. They win this game. I wouldn't want to be the Chicago Cubs, because if any team could keep that curse going, it would be the Giants.
No question about that. They've been there, done that. This is exactly the role they relish. The mistake the National League made was opening the door and letting them into the playoffs, because they've been there, take advantage of it before. And like you say, they could be a live 18-1 dog.
What do you make of the total tonight at 6? A lot of times when we get these ace games, it ends up creeping over the number. It's interesting. These two teams played 7 times this year. The Mets went 4-3, but the over was 6-1. But with that being stated, I just don't see a lot of runs being scored tonight. And both these, neither manager is going to be going to the bullpen anytime soon. Like, this is Syndergaard and Bumgarner's game to lose.
It is, and these are two ace pitchers, unquestionably. My problem in over-unders with 6 run totals is both pitchers really have to bring their A games to the game. Neither can afford to bust or go bad. Otherwise, with such a low total, you'll find these games you go over. I think if either pitcher goes bad here, it's more likely Syndergaard. I'd probably lean over the total, but I think there's a much better play on Bumgarner and the Giants.
I like the Giants and the pedigree as well. All right, let's talk some college football, Mark. Week 6, and I joined the playbook this week. We encourage people, if you want a wealth of information for like under $10, get the playbook newsletter. There's information on every collegiate and National Football League game. And I enjoyed the fat cat column this week. As week 6, week 7, this is when the so-called powers start to lose and the top 10 really starts to get shuffled up because the fat cats, they haven't had to defend their turf for a little while. And then suddenly they're just one of, there's a bunch of fat cats in an alley, Mark. It's a bad analogy. I got lost with it. But you know where I'm going now with this. And so tell our viewers about the fat cat theory in week 6.
Well, what it is 5-0 fat cats tend to really come back to earth, especially when they're favored in football games. And a lot of that reasoning, as you say, is because that 5-0 record could have been put up against weak sisters, non-conference teams, if you will. Now we're into conference play when it really counts, and the pressure begins to mount on these fat cats. So you've got a handful of teams out there this week that are 5-0 favored in football games in Game 6. It's a solid point spread play against situation here, and we're going to be going up against some pretty good teams like Alabama, Clemson, Houston, Michigan, all 5-0 this week, all favored, but I'll be on the other side of the fence.
Well, I'll tell you what, yeah, they're all laying big points, and according to Mark Lawrence's database, since 1980, teams who are 5-0 and favored in week 6 have covered only 42% of the time. Even worse, just 28-48-2 against the spread if on the road. And we have a lot of these circumstances this week, with Alabama Alabama, Clemson, Michigan. And I'm a Michigan guy, Mark, but 27.5 on the road's a hell of a lot. You know, Michigan State's not next week, but it's looming. And you know that Michigan, in the back of their minds, they think this is a walkthrough. I hope that Harbaugh reminds them they lost the last time they were on this field.
That's a good reminder, because he'll need something to motivate them. Rutgers is not much, to say the least. But again, this is a real, real tricky situation for Michigan here this week. I can't lay this kind of wood on the road in this fat cat role.
All right, so let's talk about some of these games. But quickly, the teams that are in a fat cat situation: Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, Houston, Texas A&M, and Western Michigan. You were high on Fleck and the boys. Mark, props to you as the Broncos are sailing along. All right, so Tennessee and Texas A&M. The Aggies fall into the fat cat syndrome. This line surprised me a little bit when I saw the Aggies were favored by 7.5.
It surprised me too, Gabe. In fact, if you take a look, Tony Miller over at the Golden Nugget does his college football game of the year plays before the season begins. He had made Tennessee a 7-point favorite in this game. Now they're the 7-point underdog in the contest. And the flip side of the fat cat is the 5-0 guy who dresses up as a dog in week number 6. They tend to do really, really well. So you've got Tennessee 5-0 dog to Texas A&M undefeated favorite here. This becomes a double fat cat play to Tennessee in the contest.
We're going to find out over the next couple of weeks about the Tennessee Volunteers, whether the bubble is going to burst. You can't keep laying 21 and 17 point deficits in the SEC on a weekly basis and expect to come back like the Volunteers are doing. So I'm intrigued to see whether that bubble burst. And so in your mind, Mark, and I know, let's go inside the stats then. In your mind, are the Vols lucky right now, or are they merging into this team of destiny?
I think fortuitous would be the word for this football team. I don't want to use lucky.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've really been benefactors of some great games that have gone their way this year. Last year, it was completely the opposite. They lost so many close call games. So this is a little bit of an evening out year, if you will, for Tennessee, and they're benefiting it right now. Remember, they brought a ton of talent back here. They were picked to win their division in the Southeast Conference. Started slowly, but now the momentum's carrying forward here. I look for a big effort for them against the Aggies on Saturday.
Hey, listen, the Aggies have been a great team, though, Mark. These guys are really, really, they're potential national championship contenders right now. That defense is great. But this game seems like it comes down to the wire, like all these CBS Saturday games.
It does, especially two SEC powerhouse football teams. I know you're going to talk with Joe Lisi, and I know Joe is really high in A&M and the Aggies, and probably so again this week. And, you know, for all the right reasons, you know, he's been with them from the get-go. But I think there's spots, and this spot here, I call it a collision course game. Two undefeated 5-0 teams will play the dog.
Actually, I just said it's the CBS game. I don't know if it is. Is this the CBS game, or is the Bama-Arkansas game the CBS Saturday afternoon game?
Yeah, this is the CBS game. Yes, it is.
Okay, it is. Yeah, and then they got the ESPN ones at night. All right, Clemson. We got. I like the new Friday night scene, Mark. Usually Friday nights used to just be for the Fresnos and the Nevadas of the world, but, you know, the second consecutive week we get a top 10 team. Last week, Washington and Stanford. This week we get Clemson. Listen, I thought Clemson was in a trap, sort of bad spot against Georgia Tech. They really annihilated them and shut them down. You know, this has to be considered a flat spot. Flatter than a two-day-old Coke, Mark, after that emotional win last week. And Boston College and that defense can lull you into a low-scoring battle. What about the 17 here?
17 has to be the side to look at. You're talking the number one defensive team in college football in Boston College this year. Clemson's got a pretty good game with NC State up on deck beyond this, but the key factor is that war against Louisville. That was a 15-round heavyweight slugfest that went down to the final wire, down to the final bell, if you will. And to get up for this football game and to go out and win this game by 17 or more than 17 points on the road, I think is asking a lot of Dabo Swinney in this football team. I like defenses. I like defenses that are dogs. And again, Clemson, another 5-0 fat cat.
Yeah, there's a lot of, in fact, there's a lot of like 10 and 13 point wins, sort of littered in here in low scoring games Ashing. In fact, I looked it up, Mark. Last 4 years that Clemson and Boston College have played, the deficit has been 17 points or less. Once it was 17 last year. It was 17. And that was at Clemson. So, you know, Boston College's defense is a lot better than people realize. Michigan and Rutgers, Michigan are all trendy again, and I don't like it because I want to bet on my Wolverines, but I always got to lay more points, and I should because of the marketplace, because of Harbaugh now.
Well, Harbaugh is doing a masterful job with this team this year, not only from a point spread production standpoint, but also he's held every opponent to season low yards defensively. And that's, you know, Gabe, where you win football games first and foremost is with defense. Ohio State, Alabama, those great football teams that they've had in years past, they made it to the title game because they held all their opponents to season low yardage marks. Michigan is in the process of doing that again this year. Now, they can hold Rutgers to a season low, but still not show up for the football game. That's why you can't lay this many points with Michigan, but it's going to be the game of the year, and I mean it literally, the game of the year when Ohio State takes on Michigan to end the Big Ten season.
Oh, man, that's going to be epic. Tulane and UCF, a game that not a lot of shows will be talking about, but we will. National television game, UCF laying 13.5, seems a little rich, man. That's a lot of points for these guys to be laying in a rebuilding situation. And as your database tells me, Coach Fritz, 10-5 against the spread as a dog.
Yeah, you got to like what's going on right now at Tulane this football season here. This is a football team here that has made big strides under Willie Fritz. He's done the job before in years past. All suddenly, they're a winning football team this year. They have, last time they were a winning team was back in 2013 when they went to the New Orleans Bowl. I think they can do that again this year here. I think this is too many points to be playing on a team that's improved their numbers both sides of the football. Tulane has. I got to grab up the points with the Green Wave.
We'll wrap it up with a quick little NFL tidbit here. We'll drop a nugget. But Mark, you, for people who don't know, me and Mark Lawrence tied last year in the Super Contest, in the Las Vegas Super Contest. We both finished in eighth place. Mark, I haven't looked at the standings. I don't even think I'm in 800th place this year. And, you know, it's weird because I'm making money every Sunday. But, you know, it's just weird, eh? When you got so many pots on top of the stove, not all of them are going to be gourmet meals when it's all said and done. So the contest, I'm not doing great, but I'm doing well personally. I'm making money in the NFL, so I'm happy about that. But I'll tell you, what are the reasons? How are you doing in the contest?
Well, not real well ourselves. I think I'm one game over 500 for the year. Really, really disappointed. But I'll tell you this, Gabe. What's going on in the NFL this year is unlike something I haven't seen in a long, long time. And what it is favorites are winning and covering. Underdogs are winning the games straight up. There's been no advantage or no room whatsoever for favorites who win the game and don't cover.
Yeah.
Only four of the 63 favorites that have won games this year have not covered the spread.
Wow.
That's only 6% of the teams that do that. Normally, the number is 16%. So that number is going to come back to the norm here. And as it does, look for you and I to make a move in this contest coming up here soon.
And you notice we're all going down in flames, Mark.
Yes, we are.
It's like 0-15. All the so-called wise guys were terrible. But quickly on the way out here, that's amazing. That's like the Super Bowl. I always tell people, the Super Bowl, the points don't matter. Look at last year. Denver won the game. Quickly on the way out, one of the reasons why, Mark, I mean, I've taken the Lions every week. Every week, the Lions are in a good spot. I believe in the Detroit Lions. I don't know. I don't know if I shouldn't, but I'm going back to the well once again this week. They beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, this is the week they're going to like what you get out of the well. I agree with you. I think Philadelphia comes flat in this contest. They're open up 3-0, covered the spread all three games, and what happens? They get a bye week to break the momentum. At the worst time for a bye to happen to the Philadelphia Eagle football team. And you look at teams that are on the road, game four of the season, that are 3-0 straight up into the spread. They're 1-11 straight up and 2-10 to the spread non-division games. I think Detroit ends Philadelphia's win scheme.
Go to playbook.com. You can also read playbook.com on your mobile devices, Android or iPhones. Go to the Google store for information about that, as well as playing fantasy games as well at playbook/games. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the time.
Hey, my pleasure, Gabe. Enjoy the games this week. Thank you.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. All right, we take a quick break. We come back. We talk some pucks with George Kurtz. Game time. Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. All right, let's talk some pucks. We're going to talk some more football with Joe Lisi, more college football. Thursday and Friday will be focused more so on the NFL. But it's fantasy hockey time, and I've got a draft tonight, and I've got a draft tomorrow night. I'm going to be in two fantasy hockey leagues, as well as playing some DFS NHL hockey. So let's bring in Roto expert George Kurtz to talk some pucks and some hockey strategy right now, and some rankings as well. George, happy hockey season. Always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing well. We just wrapped up the World Cup. That was always fun. Great competition. Looking forward to next Wednesday.
Yeah, you know what? I wasn't overly excited by the World Cup, but it was better than preseason hockey. It wet my whistle, so to speak, for some hockey. It sort of catapults us into this. So quickly, let's talk strategy for out there. I mean, fantasy hockey, a lot of Canadians did hockey pools, and Canadians familiar with fantasy hockey. It is growing in the United States right now, and the numbers show that. But I don't think strategy is discussed enough. And listen, I used to be the host of the Montreal Canadiens post-game show, George. I think I know hockey. Yet I've had bad fantasy draft strategies in the past, with just sort of taking the best available forward earlier without really caring what position he played. When then I would sort of find myself on the outside looking in, and I look at the depth this year, and I see a ton of great centers, but I see a big drop-off at the right wing position after, like, the top 7-8.
You're absolutely right. Hockey is a strange sport because it's loaded at center. Crosby, Tavares, Stamkos, you can go on and on and on. McDavid now, the next new superstar here. So you can wait on hockey, on centers, if you want. Now, if I have the first overall pick, I want goal scoring is big in the NHL right now, right? Not too many guys score goals. Who does score goals? Alexander Ovechkin scores goals. He's going to score power play goals. So it's going to take care of two categories for you, goals and power play. Ovechkin, to me, is the number one pick overall. Now, you mentioned wings here. Patrick Kane, right wing. 100 points last year. We don't see that in the NHL anymore. Yeah. He's another player I'm going to move up in my standings quite a bit. As you and I talked about before the show, right wing is, after the first five or six guys, it's desolate. It gets real weak real quick.
You know, it's interesting. I hope the guys in my draft aren't tuning into the show because, yeah, I'm going to jump on Kane earlier. And, you know, Tarasenko, another guy. Now, as far as goalies are concerned, I want to get into some players, but as far as the goalie strategy is concerned, I've been burnt in the past when I've underestimated the importance of it. I'm playing in head-to-head leagues, head-to-head category leagues. So if I stack my netminders, I got a chance of winning, you know, 3-4 out of five categories on a weekly basis, which really puts me in a nice spot if I can get a forward or two that's hot and get some points. How do you approach goalies? Do you go for two elite goalies? Where do you draft goalies generally? Do you go for an elite and sort of a backup, or do you go for the elite goalies? And is it insane to actually have three goalies, George?
Well, I think it depends on what type of league you're playing in, because what you're mentioning, a 5-by-5, that means half the categories are goaltenders, right? So that's half of our league is goaltending categories. I treat it like I would if I was playing in a football league and you're starting two quarterbacks. I absolutely want one elite goaltender, which means I'm not taking a goaltender any later than the second round. I want a Holtby, Carey Price, Ben Bishop, Henrik Lundqvist, someone of that ilk to carry my goaltending. And I might take the second goaltender rather quickly also. Is, let's say I'm up in the third round and I don't like any of the forwards. All the forwards are gone. If I have any hesitation whatsoever, I'll take a second elite goalie. That locks up five categories for me, and I'll piece together the offensive categories, the goals, assists, maybe plus minus is something I'll worry about later on, to worry about six categories there. I'm not afraid of taking goalies early and often, and depending on the size of your league, yeah, I'm taking a third goalie.
Yeah, you know what? I was kicking ass last year, George. How about this for my two goalies? I took Carey Price early. You know, I was a little bold. I took him fourth overall, but then I got Corey Schneider later on in the draft. So I had Price and Schneider. I was wrecking things early. Price, though, always gets hurt. I can't trust him. I don't want to compare him to Sammy Watkins, because Carey Price is better than Sammy Watkins is. But I got burnt this year in drafting Sammy Watkins in a couple of leagues, and I'm gun-shy when it comes to Carey Price. Will you draft Carey Price, or are you worried about the injury situation all the time?
Well, are you worried about the injury situation? Absolutely. Now, I had a chance. In my home league drafted last Friday, I did take a goalie first round, and I'm debating Price Holtby. The injury forced me to go Holtby there, but I'm not going to stay away from Price. I think he's going to be just fine, so I don't want to get too worried and overthink it so much. He's one of the best goaltenders in the league, and one great thing about the World Cup, we've already seen him play. He looks great. He's going to be fine. I have him as my number two goalie behind Holtby.
Sidney Crosby was somewhat always picked on. It's funny, even in Canada, a lot of generally hockey fans don't like Sidney Crosby unless he's wearing a Team Canada jersey and he saves their ass like he does all their time. But you know, as a member of the Penguins, you know, people like to pick on him, but he showed last year. You know, in 2016, once January 1st came, he was the leading scorer in the second half of the season. And I think, George, he's only going to get better, as crazy as this sounds. The pressure's off him right now. Winning one cup wasn't enough. You know, now he's got that other cup. Yeah, another one would be nice, that third one. But I think he can be a little bit more comfortable. I think we're going to see him have a little bit more fun. He's racked up an incredible amount of international accomplishments now. Now he's got a couple of Stanley Cup championships. He can just have fun, go out there and play hockey and go for three. And he's just so dynamic. He can score, set people up. I know it's obvious we're talking about Crosby, but I just wanted to point out that Crosby's still the best player in the league, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think most people would agree that, yes, we don't like him sometimes for how he acts on the ice. You mentioned we only like him if he's wearing a Team Canada jersey. Well, once the NHL season starts, you only like him if you're a Pittsburgh Penguin fan or if he's on your fantasy team. But he doesn't get the love he probably deserves. He's consistent. The injury history has gone away now for the past couple of years. But as you're sort of mentioning, I've gotten questions. You know, the top five guys in my draft are going to go Ovechkin, Kane, Tavares. They don't even mention Crosby. I'm in my home league the other night. I'll mention it again. Crosby wasn't one of the top five players. He's falling, and I'm wondering why. Why? He's a great player. He's consistent. He's going to put up points. He probably is the best overall player in the league. I have no issues with Crosby whatsoever. I may not like him. I'm an Islander fan. I don't like the way he's up next, but I'll draft him.
You know what? How about John Tavares? There's a center I wouldn't mind having on my team as well. All right, let's blast through a couple of other players here. It's funny, George, when we talk about football, we talk about basketball, fantasy, and even baseball, there's generally like real strong consensuses, right? With like number one, oh, it's Antonio Brown. Like you can't even think about it. Hockey, there really are debates. Like you said, you like Ovechkin. A lot of people think, you know, Crosby is a worthy top fantasy pick overall. You know, Connor McDavid. What about McDavid? Top five for you?
Not for me because of what we talked about earlier. Center is so deep. Now, I love McDavid, so I don't want to think anybody's... I'm not poo-pooing him. He's going to be great. But he's small. I wonder if he can last the whole season. And I don't need to take a chance at my first-round pick. Yep. There are so many other centers here. I have him as a late first round, in the 8 to 12 range. But I'm not taking him top five. No, I'll go with Tavares, Crosby, Stamkos, Seguin, who I'm forgetting about, Kane, Ovechkin. Those are my top six.
What about Gostisbehere? And where does he go? We were talking earlier with some hockey guys here. Our boy Luke says Gostisbehere might go high because of the hype right now. Man, this guy was a DraftKings machine last year. Most points by a rookie defenseman in the last quarter of a century. He's not flying under the radar any year, but do you expect to have monster numbers from him again?
Yeah, the Ghost was great last year. You mentioned he flew under the radar. We did not see that coming last year. And there are always players like this. I love the Ghost. I have him as a low-end D1, top 12. I think I have him at number 11 overall. Good, solid player. That's a better team than we give them credit for. You got Giroux, Simmons, Shen on the top line. Shen suspended for the first three games. But that line's going to score goals. He'll be out there for the power play. I don't see why he can't get a little better. 17 goals, maybe not better than that, but I think more assists are coming this year. A higher point total.
A player that's heavily criticized in a city that he plays in, Max Pacioretty. Max Pacioretty is the Montreal Canadiens captain. There was talk that the head coach, Michel Therrien, was overheard telling people that not only is he the worst captain that he's ever had, is the worst captain of the Canadiens. He denied it. Legendary Montreal Canadian Hall of Famer Guy Lafleur, he's always on Pacioretty's ass. He always blames him when they lose in the playoffs. But I've almost bought into it as well. I think what it is, actually, is the fact he's American. And let's be real. If Patriotti's last name was Lajeunesse or Latendresse or Boucher or Morancy, he would be a hell of a lot more popular than he is. But Patriotti puts numbers up, George. He wasn't healthy, but when he's healthy, three of the last four seasons, man, we're talking about a 30-35 goal scorer.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Pacioretty as well. Well, you know, when I talk about the Canadians, the people who maybe don't know hockey as well as they should, the Canadians are the equivalent of the New York Yankees of baseball. The media eats them up up there. That's all they're going to talk about. A lot of pressure to play there. I think Pacioretty maybe gets a bad rap because of that.
Yep.
He's a goal scorer. Am I drafting him for assists to set people up? No, but he won't hurt you there. But I think a return to 35, 40 goals might be a little bit high, but I'm still taking him. I'm not shying away from him at all. Anybody who's capable of scoring 30 goals, and he is capable, is valuable. He's a wing one.
All right, and quickly on the way out here, another guy on this team that probably flies under the radar because they play in Quebec. They're not on on the American scene, so to speak, but an American player from Wisconsin in Alex Galchenyuk. You know, this kid has improved in the last 3 years. I don't know how the hell he didn't make one of these rosters in the World Cup. He could have made the men's team, let alone the under-23 team. But this kid really flies under the radar. And here's potential. 30 goals last year, 26 assists. Do you like Galchenyuk? Do you think he goes up and continues to climb the ladder?
They should leave him alone. Let him play center. Let him play wing. Stop bouncing him around. You know, when you do this to a young player, they don't get comfortable anywhere. This is a good player who just hasn't got the love from his own coaching staff. Leave this kid alone. If you want him to play with Pacioretty, great. You want to be a second line center? Great.
Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. If you wonder what goes on in between the breaks here, we were just talking right up to the final second about fantasy hockey, actually. As the NHL season will be, it'll be nice to have another sport to give you some picks with. But last night we gave you 5 picks, 1 baseball game, 4 winners. Very, very strong. We look to do it again. We got another 5 picks for the 1 baseball game. We're not always going to have 5 picks per game, but I know you guys like action, so we're betting the strikeout props as well as the games, the sides, and the totals, etc. So let's talk some college football right now. Joe was unable to join us last week. Joe Lisi, you can hear him and Rich Sermonello every Saturday morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Networks. GoForTheTwo.com is Joe's website. Let's talk some college ball with Joe Lisi. Joe, always good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Gabe. Looking forward to another great weekend of college football. Love the show.
Yeah, we just had one of your good friends of mine on, Mark Lawrence. We're talking about week 6. This is when some of the contenders start to go down. The fat cats start to struggle a little bit, and we start to find out who's for real. Separation Saturday, so to speak. So let's start off with the number one team in the nation, Alabama. Alabama laying 14 points going into Fayetteville against Arkansas. Total 49 points. Bama's offense is rolling, man, putting up 44 points per game.
Yeah, it's an interesting battle. Since 2011, Alabama's 5-0 and has won those ball games by 28 points per game, but the last two games, Gabe, have been decided by a total of 14 points. I think Arkansas can run the football effectively with running back Raleigh Williams and keep this game very close. They're averaging 36 points per game and rushing for 197 yards on the ground. Think they can work off a play action with quarterback Austin Allen. I think Alabama wins, but I think it's a very close ball game. In the end, Arkansas covers the number.
Yeah, you know what? Arkansas has a little bit of balance right now as well. As you mentioned, the rushing for 197, the throw for 246. Bama won 27-14 last year. They beat the Hogs 14-13 a couple of years ago on the road. We're in the time of the year right now, and we're seeing in the SEC, man, a lot of real close games, actually, Joe, coming down to the wire on a weekly basis in the SEC.
Yeah, there's a lot of parity in college football, Gabe. I think that's what you're seeing from top to bottom, and a lot of inconsistency from some of the top teams in the country. But they better start picking it up in gear because they have to make playoff runs through conference play. So we'll see how it plays out, but I think we'll start to see the better teams start to raise their bar this coming weekend.
Alabama, we should mention, Nick Saban's just 1-4 against the spread the last 5 times on the road when favored by double digits. by 10 or more. You know, it's a weird spot for Alabama here. I think Bama survives, but the 14 points is too high. All right, so let's get to Tennessee and Texas A&M. We've been talking about a fat cat theory in which 5-0 football teams, Joe, in week six since 1980 have only covered 42% of the time. You know, they're feeling a little bit, you know, good about themselves. The competition begins to get a little bit tougher. But we got a monster SEC matchup. And credit to you, Joe, your Texas A&M Aggies. You told us midsummer that the Aggies were going to challenge for the SEC championship and maybe the national championship as well. Here they are right now, unbeaten. And they got the Tennessee Volunteers who keep on dodging bullets, man, coming to town. I assume you like the Aggies.
Yeah, I love the Aggies in this matchup, Gabe, because of the way they're running the football with Travion Williams. They're averaging 258 rushing yards per game entering this battle, and they're shutting down the run effectively, only giving up 134 yards on the ground. Defensively, they're only giving up 15 points per game, and they have 16 total sacks with both defensive ends, Miles Garrett and Deshaun Hall, that have three sacks apiece. And I look at this defense on third down, only giving up 33% on third down conversions. That's big for me. I think this defense steps up, and I think Texas A&M dominates this matchup from start to finish. It's back-to-back road games for Tennessee. There'll be 110,000 fans in the stadium, and more importantly, Trevor Knight's playing well within the system. I think Texas A&M is the fresher team, and they win this game by double digits.
Yeah, you have to wonder when the pressure catches up to the Vols. Never mind the fact that, yeah, they almost have a team of destiny thing going for them right now, but a real, real emotional game against Florida a couple of weeks ago. Then the crazy comeback Hail Mary win against Georgia last week. And now going to Texas. That's tough. That's tough for teenagers. And we're not talking about a professional. It'd be a tough spot for a professional football team, let alone kids. You know, mentioned Trevor Knight, man. The Aggies are putting up 39 points a game. Travion Williams is averaging over 9 yards per rush for the Texas A&M Aggies. I think the Aggies survive, actually, here. I don't want to lay the 7, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did pull away late.
Yeah, well, for me, it comes down to the offensive line, too, with Trevor Knight's mobility. Texas A&M only allowing 5 sacks through 5 games. So unless Tennessee could generate a pass rush, I think it's going to be a field day for that offense. And you look at the flip side, Tennessee's offensive line through 5 games has allowed already 10 sacks. So those defensive ends, I think, can make Josh Dobbs and that offense one-dimensional. And I think this is a convincing home win for the Texas A&M.
You know, a game that's flying under the radar this week is Florida State and Miami Hurricanes. Is that Miami or another one of these teams rejuvenated with a coaching change? You know, Rick's doing a great job with the Canes right now. They've lost those 6 straight times to the Florida State Seminoles. Yeah, I don't know where the Seminoles' minds are going to be right now. That was, you know, they responded after the loss to Louisville. They took care of business against South Florida. They looked like, you know, they rallied back late and they were going to dodge a bullet against North Carolina. Then that big long field goal beats them. I don't know where these kids could be right now. I mean, they thought they were going to be playing in a national championship game. Now they're going into Miami. Miami's feeling pretty good about themselves. They got an NFL caliber quarterback in Brad Kaya. They got a great coach. They've lost 6 in a row against this team. A lot of motivation. Only laying 2.5, 3 points. What's your take on Florida State and the Canes?
I still like Florida State offensively in this battle. Throw the defenses out the window. Florida State's rushing for 240 yards on the ground, and they have the best player on the field in Dalvin Cook, even though he hasn't lived up to expectations this year. I look at Miami right now. They're a one-dimensional offense. They're only rushing for 111 yards on the ground. I think Florida State makes Brad Kaya and that offense one-dimensional, and I think Dalvin Cook breaks out for a big day, calling for a Seminoles slight upset over Miami. I think it's high scoring, but the Seminoles pull out the victory on the road.
Yeah, you know, Dalvin Cook is feasted, pardon the pun, on the Canes over the years. All right, we've only got a couple of minutes left here, Joe. So I got to tell you, man, you know, I would never imagined that the winner of the Buffalo Bills and the Rams, if the Rams win the game, they're going to be 4-1. If the Bills win, they're going to be 3-2. I never thought that Dan Henderson would be fighting for a UFC championship this weekend at 46 years old. And I never imagined that a week 6 matchup this year between the Colorado Buffaloes and the USC Trojans would be listed on on the top 25 scores on all the websites because Colorado are the top 25 team, Joe.
They're unbelievable, Gabe, what they're doing. Mike McIntyre is a solid head coach, and this team is playing emotional football. Love the way they play both on both sides of the ball, and I think they give USC all they can handle this weekend.
You know, it's amazing to me, though, that it's only 4.5 points. That it's only 4.5 points. Is this what it's come to? Because I'll tell you, man, Sam Darnold's looked pretty good at quarterback. It looks like they made the right decision.
They did, and he had a breakout performance actually 2 weeks ago on the road against Utah. They followed that up with a solid home victory, dominating home victory over Arizona State. So I think that's why you're seeing the such the low number. But I like the way Colorado plays on the road, and I think they're the better team, only giving up 140 rushing yards per game, and they're rushing for 218 yards on the ground with running back Philip Lindsay, who's averaging 14 yards a carry. I think this is the more complete team that has more to play for. I think the Buffalo strike the upset in the Coliseum.
If Colorado wins this game, then they're just going to end up going through another coach here. I mean, I know they don't want to do this all the time, but if Clay Helton loses his game to Colorado, they've got real problems then. Like, you know, it's just unacceptable. They can't lose this game to Colorado.
Absolutely. I mean, the pressure is on USC, and still a young quarterback. He has growing pains. So in my opinion, I go with the looser team in Colorado and the more complete team led by a solid head coach in Mike McIntyre.
Yeah, I wish we had time to get to LSU and Florida. We got to get out of here. So just who wins the game, LSU or Florida?
Florida, Gabe. I like their defense.
All right, we got to get out of here. Go for the two. You want more Joe? Check him out. Check out his website. You can listen to him and Rich Sermonello every Saturday morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for the time, Joe.
Always a pleasure, Gabe. Love the show.
Joe Lisi with us. All right, we take a quick break. We come back with our Major League Baseball plays of the day. All right, the Major League Baseball postseason began last night, and it was pretty crazy, wasn't it? It was actually pretty entertaining as well. And we got the Giants and the Mets on tap. Last night, we gave you five picks. We went 4-1. Let's start off with the Giants. This game's a real toss-up. Don't go huge. We're not betting nickels and dimes here, but we're going to have a piece of the Giants. I like the pedigree, and I like Bumgarner. The total is 6. It's extremely low, but I really do think this has the feel of one of those 2-1, 3-1 style games. We're going to roll the dice, no run in the first inning. It's getting up there as high as minus 190 at some spots right now. Now listen, no one's getting rich betting against Bumgarner and Syndergaard strikeout props, but we split the props last night and both these are plus money. So under 7.5 strikeouts for Bumgarner in a plus money range and under strikeouts for Syndergaard as well in plus money. Don't go crazy with the props, but we're rolling the dice. Either or not, you're on your own, man, the winners be yours.